Welcome to One Degree of Scandalous with Kato Kaelin.
Do you feel my energy, baby?
The world famous K-Train.
America's favorite house guest at one point. I'm staying over at your place. Still at this point.
Time out.
Yeah.
There's no one in your league when it comes to favorite house guests.
All right, I love you.
For now and forever. Kato Kaelin, I'm Tom Zenner. Hey, thanks so much for watching. If you're new to the show, I welcome you. I ask you to subscribe, to download this sucker. If you're watching us on YouTube, man, you got a nice catalog of past episodes to watch.
You said sucker. I've not heard sucker since I'm from the Midwest. That was,
it's
that
been
was
a while.
Big, it's like, Tom's bringing back the word sucker.
It's like saying, Kato, would you like a pop?
Yeah.
That's how people in
soda.
The Midwest
you want
talk.
Soda? You go to a bubbler.
Yeah, but hey, this is the show when it comes to scandal. If there's something going on in the news or in the past involving scandal, we're all over it. Just go check out our past episodes. Yeah. So, what's shaking, man?
I know you had
a bit of a rough ride over here, but are you okay?
Yeah.
Everything cool?
Yeah,
all right.
I just
we'll get to it later.
Yeah. You know, I get fed up with certain things here in LA. So.
But you know what? This show is something that can calm you down, let you have some fun, put you in your element here.
The guest, when we have a great guest, which I really think every one of our guests have been spot on. And I know today's guest, I already know he'll put me at peace because it involves some sports. And I'm sure that he's a gentleman that I researched a little bit. He knows every trivial, every nostalgic thing this guy knows or will know.
Yeah.
And I'm in, and I really like that. He's the best person sitting next to in a bar watching a game.
He's very entertaining, too. I've seen him he did the Today Show just recently. He has a new book out. It's Jeff Perlman, so we're going to be getting to him in a second. But he's written some of the most famous sports books, biographies of all time, on huge characters, big, big, big-time personalities. And when you talk about scandal, he was in the middle of one of the biggest ones ever.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to sports and just kind of pop culture, something that dominates a news cycle for a few days or a couple weeks, it was back in 1999. We're going to revisit it and get all the inside scoop of what happened.
And
you're going to remember it. It was unbelievable.
And it's really not even a sports show. It's the scandal involving with, and it's really sort of a human interest story of what goes on. Now, Tom, when I walked in earlier, you were going to say something, and I said, Tom, you're hesitant to say, you're reluctant to talk about something, and you always say, you're like, I better not. I said, Tom, we can always edit it out.
We can.
But can you say?
I can.
What is it?
I need some advice here. I need some opinions. Stock tip day. Pay attention for the next 2 minutes here.
He's sleeping
Forget again. About making your bets on. You know, on the Orlando Magic, seeing if they can cover in the first 2 minutes of the game.
Right.
So tell me, guys, what you think of this. So I have a daughter, 24 years old, mm-hmm. Brooke, my oldest, beautiful, intelligent, wonderful girl, just amazing, former soccer star at Pepperdine. Now she's a teacher.
Wow.
And she's got a great boyfriend. As a dad, you can't ask for anything more. I mean, seriously, if you have a daughter and she, I mean, it must be like the fathers of our wives, how they felt when they met us, right,
yeah,
Kato?
Yeah, yeah,
at least
we
hope so. But this guy is the best. I mean, he is a great kid, smart, graduated with his master's, an athlete, and just a family guy. Again, if you're a parent watching, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You feel good. So, and my other two kids love him. They just love him. Michael, they love him. So, he gave me a call earlier this week, and he wanted to know if...
He said, I'm gay.
Thanks, you're making me feel a lot better. He wanted to know if we could get together this week. You know, hey, what's your week look like? Can we grab a beer or some lunch or something? Of course, I love spending time with Michael, but I'm thinking there's two reasons. Number one, he's already got a good job and he's doing well, but he's a sports guy. So maybe he thinks he wants a job in sports, talk to me, see if we can open some doors and make that happen. Or he's thinking of maybe proposing. I'm thinking it's going to be the proposal. I mean, I don't want to put any pressure on anybody or anything, but I think if it was the job, do you think he would have said something if it had been job related?
How long have you been dating?
2 years, 2.5 years, but they're a legit couple. I mean,
if it's 2.5 years, I think it might be both.
You think? Two birds with one stone? Hey, but can you get me a job at the Dodgers? And by the way, can I marry your daughter? It could be. It could be.
It could be. But has it happened before where he said, hey, I'm going to hang out and have a beer? Or is this
not to that level, or not where there wasn't something specifically attached as far as a topic?
Yeah.
So we'll find out.
Sounds like a proposal about to happen.
I'm going to go with that too. I'm going to put a bet on the proposal. And have you had any hints from your daughter?
I mean, I think she's ready to do it.
I mean, have you had any hints about.
She hasn't said, hey, Dad, he might be calling you. No, she hasn't said anything.
Oh,
but they have hinted around about, you know, look, she doesn't want to have a big wedding, which is cool.
Yeah.
She wants to do the big party and maybe elope. And that's the way I think kids should do it. I think that's how you should do it
right now.
I think a church wedding is so overrated. When Shonda and I got married, it was on the beach in Maui at sunset with 10 people. And by the way, the funniest part of this story, and then you can tell me a funny wedding story, Cato. You got a lot. Check this out. So when Sean and I got married, she was living in Minneapolis. I was in Phoenix. I was the sports anchor at Channel 12 in Phoenix. And, you know, I knew how lucky I was to be marrying her. She's an amazing person. And so she went out to Hawaii a little bit early with her parents and a couple of her siblings and maybe a couple other friends. And they were going to have a little vacation out there. The wedding was on a Sunday night at 6 o'clock. I flew out to Maui Sunday morning. What if my flight?
From where?
From Phoenix. No, from LA. Because okay. I was in LA.
5 hour flight.
Well, what if the flight got canceled? She told me, she goes, okay, I'm marrying somebody. I got the dress.
What's the date?
July 3rd.
July 3rd. Okay.
Yeah. July 6th. But the funny part of this, and I'll just say this real quick. So I showed up, we get married. It was awesome. Beautiful little ceremony. The next day we go into downtown Maui to get our marriage license. There's only one place you can do it. It's at this jeweler's. We go in there, all happy, we're married, blah, blah, blah. Hey, I'm Tom Shonda here. We're here to get our marriage license. This woman looked at us like I was a retard. I mean, I don't know if you can say that word anymore, but that's how she looked at me. Like, seriously,
she can say it.
She looks at me and she goes, direct quote, "You're not married." I go, "What do you mean? We got married last night." "You're not married. You get the marriage license before the wedding." So technically we weren't married. So the guy that married us the night before, he was high and he was just fun. And he was just like, "Hey, I got Jesus and Mary and Joseph here." He was like a party. He was super entertaining. I had to call him back and he had to meet us by the dumpsters at the Hyatt Regency. And he came back there and we were back there and he goes, "All right, okay. Look in her eyes. Tell her you love her. Okay. Say you love him. Okay. You're married." So he had to like do this little thing, but it was literally in front of the garbage dumpsters at the Hyatt Regency. Wow. Not as romantic as the night before, but we have two anniversaries.
Great photo album too, that dumpster.
We know all about your wedding.
Yeah, we did my wedding. And so, and it's funny because I mentioned I got married to David Zucker, and David Zucker right now is in, there's a huge story on David. I don't know if you know. So speaking of scandals, scandal was—
By the way, remind everybody the powerhouse movies he's done.
Oh yeah, well, David Zucker, if you know, and he's
a Wisconsin guy.
They had at University of Wisconsin Madison, he started a theater called Kentucky Fried Theater. That became Kentucky Fried Movie, which got them very, very, very popular, and Hollywood noticed them. It was David and his brother Jerry Zucker and Jim Abrams still together. And anyways, they did Airplane. Then David did all the Naked Guns. He did Top Secret, Val Kilmer. There's a picture of me and Val Kilmer next to each other of. I didn't get the part, but and he did Hot Shots, yeah, and Abrams, and there may be a Hot Shots 3. That's all I can say. There may be a Hot Shots 3. There should be. Are you kidding me? Cary Elwes and Charlie Sheen, the lead. That was one of the funniest movies with the French actress from Rain Man. I can't think of her name offhand.
I never put those two together. That was her from Rain Man.
Yeah.
Oh, she's great.
She's the love interest, and she's.
No, but you're talking about Zucker being in the news?
Yeah. So David's in the news because they were asking him about the woke culture. And he says the woke culture has destroyed comedy because when he writes a script, he goes, he hopes the pendulum will swing back. It's a great article. And it's so far to this side, it's got to come back to where people aren't offended by everything. And he gave an example about writing a script of a film that he wrote with a woman in the who was a cop. She goes up to the FBI. She's graduating, and they're putting on a Kevlar suit. And they and part of the script says, "You're going to need a breast reduction." And the Hollywood elite were going, "That's a little bit too touchy." And I'm going, "Are you kidding me?" Of course, I can see the comedy that David has in mind for this joke.
Right.
And the article is like, you can pick it up anywhere. Go online and see it. I think it's on.
Is it Hollywood Reporter? I saw it too.
I think it's Fox News okay. Digital. Or
but the funny thing is, when this creeps into the mind of brilliant comedy writers, that's bad. That's not good. That's not good for culture. It's not good for entertainment.
Even the liberals, Bill Maher's against it because the woke culture is killing comedy. Chappelle hosting. You're about Dave Chappelle's hosting Saturday Night Live, and already the cast and people have petitioned not to show up.
here's the thing.
It's comedy.
It be offended, but why do we have to care? Why do we have to listen to you? I mean, be offended, but let the people that enjoy it enjoy it. I mean, we're giving way too much power to the woke people. By the way, Ron DeSantis had the best comment after he won. He talked about Florida. He goes, "This is where woke comes to die."
Yeah.
That was his line. I like that. But anyway, okay, good stuff. You ready for the interview?
Yep, let's do it.
You got your questions ready?
I did. As a matter of fact, I interviewed other people that own sports agencies. Questions for Jeff that are big fans of Jeff. So fire away. I can't wait to meet Jeff. I'm sure he's out somewhere on the beach.
We're going to find out here shortly. Quick little break and we'll be back with Jeff Perlman. All right, Cato, let's do it. live from SoCal. You know, for some reason, I was thinking this guy because he's kind of synonymous with the East Coast if you followed his career over the last two decades. But he's in SoCal, as you can see by the look right now. Let's bring him in. Jeff Perlman, very, very famous author, used to be a writer for Sports Illustrated, has the great new book on Bo Jackson out right now.
Yeah, and Jeff is the first guest ever to use sunscreen on our show.
He looks chilled and relaxed. He looks like a guy that just finished a book and he can finally breathe, right? The thing is just selling now.
I'm guessing he's at PB in Pacific Beach. He's wearing the San Diego Padre hat. I don't know if he's at PB, La Jolla, but I know it's expensive in La Jolla, so I'm going to say he's in La Jolla.
You're close. But hey, Jeff, welcome, man. Pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. My daughter is a student at UC San Diego, so she is actually in La Jolla as we speak.
And what a great campus. I have a friend that his daughter graduated there. Yeah, that's beautiful campus. Jeff Perlman, by the way.
Hey, by the way, did you hear San Diego State might be going into the Pac-12? That's interesting. That's cool. Good for San Diego. But hey, Jeff, welcome, man. I know it's been a busy time on the promotional tour. The big new book with Bo Jackson, The Last Folk Hero. We can talk about that. Of course, we're going to talk about the John Rocker scandal from back in the day when Jeff was at Sports Illustrated. He's got the book on Brett Favre. Winning Time is based off Jeff's book. So much to chat about. Jeff, how big of a sports fan are you? I mean, are you a fanatical sports fan, or do you just find unbelievably compelling stories in sports?
No, I would say once you cover sports, when I was at Sports Illustrated, which was my dream job coming up, and I was a baseball writer, you start to lose the day-to-day. You know, like once you go into locker rooms and the clubhouses and you deal with these guys left and right and you see the mechanisms behind it all, you definitely lose that. I love writing. I love nostalgia. I love sports history. Am I a diehard? How many innings of Major League Baseball did I watch this year? Probably 12. How many wow. NFL games have I watched? Soup to nuts, beginning to end, I think zero. But I'm a nostalgist more than
is that the reason you're not watching all, because of nostalgia? You don't watch you probably watch World Series, but I found myself the older I get, I was an incredible sports fan where I started breaking things and I saw what it did to my. With the Packers, I see what it does to my Sunday and does to my relationships. So I'm thinking the older I'm getting, I'm just saying, it's not worth it. Why am I doing this? These guys aren't loyal to me. And I started, and if you're from Wisconsin, Jeff, you know there's an incredible loyalty, the loyalty of the fans. They are the most loyal fans from, sitting in freezing temperatures. You're just loyal to your teams. But you start seeing the people that are involved in the sports aren't loyal. They go to the money. They'll leave the team. I think a lot of times lately, it's just they don't care about the fans. Except the one guy, I got to say, the NBA. I think it's an Antetokounmpo. He's just said he's
Giannis,
got offers.
Well, Giannis is very unique.
He's just one of the, and that's why I think he's been embraced by the
team. Hey,
Jeff,
Cato's speaking like a guy whose team just lost three games in a row and is probably going to lose the next three. They don't care about me. Why should I care about them?
Wait, but I think there's a fair point there. Like I'm actually amazed by Raider fans. Right. All right. So the team is in Oakland for decades and you live and die with them. Okay. And then they move to LA. Well, it's still in California. So, okay, we'll follow them down there. Then they move back to Oakland. All right. And then they move to Vegas and you stick with them. And I'll never fully understand that. I know they need a new stadium and blah, blah, blah. But if it's about the fans, it's always about the fans. We love the fans. You're leaving them for Las Vegas? Like, it's so much about the fans that you're moving to. And the crazy thing is Raider fans move with their team. And now they're all Vegas Raider fans.
Yeah.
You know, part of that, though, I look at part of that, though, they had to get a new stadium built. And that was probably hard to do in Oakland. And maybe, Mark Davis was just spoiled and thinking they would follow them. And plus those Raider fans, it's almost like a cult. It's a brand onto themselves where they think they're badass, which they kind of are if you've ever walked through any of their tailgate parties. But it's interesting. And let's just start with the Bo Jackson book real quick. Congrats. What a compelling individual. I know how you feel about him as just an athlete. When you started that book, because Bo didn't cooperate with you,
he was a Raider. So
right, and a Raider. When you went into it, did you say, I'm doing this whether he wants to do this with me or not?
Yeah, because I view it as a biography is not an autobiography. So I'm not writing it with him. I'm writing it about him. You hope someone participates. I sent him early on a bunch of my books and a letter. And he called me and we had a pretty long talk and he was cool. He was nice. It's like, I don't mind you doing it. It's just not, I don't really like getting involved in these things. And I actually got really lucky because in 1990, he had an autobiography that he wrote with Dick Shapp, a legendary journalist.
Yeah.
And before Dick Shep passed away, he donated all the notes, all the audio cassettes from that, from those sessions to the Auburn Library. So I actually reached out to the Auburn Library, paid $250. They copied all of it and sent it to me. So I had pages and pages and pages and documents and documents and documents of original Bo Jackson material, most of which was never used before.
It's incredible.
Do you stay, is there is people that you actually, Bo Jackson and others you have written stories on, do you actually stay in touch with them? Do they want to stay in touch with you? Do you form a friendship? Or is there a point when you're writing the book where you're going, this guy's an asshole, and even though you're still writing it? And is there anybody that's uncooperative? I know you said about the Bo Jackson, but how does that go for relationships, because you spend time with these people?
Generally, I don't stay in touch. I always view it as a I have a couple of friends from my experience of covering sports, but very few. Like, to me, the thing is, you're not doing it to make friends. Like, you're really not doing it to make friends. The goal for me is to write a great book. And the other thing is I'm not writing a kiss ass of you. So if you're Brett Favre and this book comes out, like, Brett Favre is a perfect example. His family was great. They cooperated fully. They were lovely. I love going to Kill Mississippi, Southern Miss, all that stuff. But am I going to write about his addiction issues? Yes. Am I going to write him sending pictures of his penis to a sideline reporter? Yes. Like,
it's part of the story.
Who hasn't done that?
It's part of the story. So if you want to form friendships with people, you kiss their asses. I just didn't want, I don't believe in that.
Yeah, it's a fine line, right? Especially because sometimes, maybe as we talk about Rocker too, I mean, sometimes they expect that, or they're a little naive, right? Yeah. They forget that you're an actual journalist or that you have a job to do, because they do have a lot of writers around them, or beat writers or whatever, that kiss their ass. Well, because they need to.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, of Favre and the penis text and that, when the book came up, does he go, why did you put that in there? You get those phone calls? You get them from the lawyers? You get them from the source itself?
Oh, yeah, of course. You get it from family members. You get it from, I wrote a biography of Roger Clemens, and he just teed off on me on Twitter. You know, like, all right, well, that's fine. You know, you write about, I wrote about the 86 Mets. That was my first book. Yeah. That was a team I grew up with. And after it came out, I was supposed to appear. I was living in New York, the best damn sports show, an old TV show that used to be on Fox LA. And I was going to appear on it with Lenny Dykstra and Ron Darling. And I show up at the show. This is my first book. And the producer says, listen, Lenny Dykstra hates the book and he's not coming on. And I said, all right. And then Ron Darling was there in the studio. I was actually nervous to see Ron Darling. And Ron Darling sees me and says, Jeff, you nailed it. You got it perfectly right. So in a way, that's the best compliment. That is the best thing you can have. It's one guy who says you're an asshole and the other guy who says you got it great. Like, that's where you want to be, right in the middle.
Yeah. Isn't Lenny Dykstra and Ron Darling, they hate each other, correct? I'm seeing.
Yeah,
I think
Lenny Dykstra's insane. Like, he's actually
certifiable. Insane. Yeah.
Well, it's funny you say this, because I met Lenny Dykstra many times. I met Favre in a tournament. I met Bo Jackson. So the relationships are all these things. Bo Jackson had a celebrity poker thing. He was sort of indifferent to me, not friendly. I was like, Bo, I love you. And he was like, oh, I was like, I think it's probably.
Bo doesn't like Kano. Bo's not on the
page. I think it was an OJ thing.
Did he talk in the third person with you?
Yeah. He just, I think it's because I knocked him out of the poker tournament. Okay. I could have been.
Bo's pissed.
But I know what it is. And Clemens, I met him too. So when you meet people in social events, it's completely different than when you sit down and you write a book with them. Because
writing the book with them. And that's the key, right? You're writing the book about them.
But he's got all the
issues. No, that's of course,
the thing
right?
Is, well, the point I always try to make, which I understand, if you're Bo Jackson, just as an example, and some guy calls you, hey, this is Jeff Perlman. I want to write a biography about you. I consider you a significant historic figure. I want to do the definitive biographical treatment because I think your career, it's important enough and blah, blah, blah. Well, Bo Jackson's going to say, or at least think, so how much money are you paying me? Well, I can't pay you money because it's not. Then it'll say, well, can I at least read it before it comes out? No, journalistically, you can't. Can you at least reassure me that you won't write about blank, blank, and blank? No, I can't.
Like, 0-3.
So I get it. I actually get it. You're Bo Jackson. Why would you do it? But on the other hand, as I always say, and I do think it's important, a decreasing number of people remember Bo Jackson. That's just a reality. As you get older and as your time passes, people forget you. And I consider him one of the most significant and important sports historical figures of the past century. I really do. So to me, even if he's not interested, I want people to remember his legacy, and I want kids to know about Bo Jackson.
Yeah, I was just telling Mark that I forgot, I mean Tom, sorry, that I've forgotten many things about him. How often, Jeff, are the things you write, is it your call or is it the publisher's call a lot of times say, this is just too outrageous? Or is there anything that was been like too outrageous? You go, I can't write that? And how much is the call? Is it your call or is it the publisher's call?
Well, it's, I mean, I try to use journalistic judgment, so I'm not going to put something into not verified or potentially litigious, et cetera. And the publisher after a book or before a book comes out, after you hand it in, has a lawyer comb through it, look through everything, make sure stuff is sourced properly.
Has anything ever gone to trial? Has anything ever happened? No suits?
That's the next book.
That's the next book. Jeff, you do a good job picking topics that do have some scandal in them. I mean, the 86 Mets, I mean, unbelievable. Roger Clemens, scandal all the way. Barry Bonds. Now you got Brett Favre. It does make, for a compelling biography or a compelling a resume for you. Are you drawn to that? I mean, did you think, let's talk about Rocker for one second. Yeah. Were you drawn to that or did that just happen?
I'm sure I'm sure six of your viewers / listeners even remember John
Rocker. Then let me set it up. Okay.
I remember. Yeah.
Okay, so Jeff was one of the top baseball writers for Sports Illustrated at the time. And John Rocker was a relief pitcher for the Atlanta Braves. And the Atlanta Braves were good. This is in the 90s. And he was a very, very polarizing figure. He was a big guy. He came in aggressively out of the bullpen. He was a closer. And he was a redneck. I think that's one way of putting it. And what blew the whole thing up, and this was a huge scandal. Jeff can remind us of the year, but this was big. I mean, it dominated for a while where the story in Sports Illustrated came out where they went, the Braves were playing the Mets, so I think they were involved in riding the subways in New York City, and maybe it was partly in Atlanta as well, but he came off as almost like a borderline racist with some of the comments that he had. I mean, he was completely unhinged. You wouldn't think that anybody in their right mind would say something like that. And it took on a life of its own, and everybody knew you at that point, Jeff. How's that for a tee up?
That was pretty good. You got most of it right. It was it was late 99. Mets were playing the Braves in the NLCS. Atlanta had a pitcher, John Rocker, young relief pitcher, really good. The magazine wanted me to profile him. I did a profile on him that never ran because I got I wrote about him during the playoffs, but then what happened is the Braves made it to the World Series, got swept by the Yankees. So the story I wrote never ran because the Braves were out of it so quick. So when the season ended, my editors asked me to freshen up the John Rocker story. And I called John Rocker's agent and I said, I would love to spend some time with John. And the agent was like, oh, that's great. You're going to love him, blah, blah, blah. So I flew down to Georgia. This is, late 99, after the season was over, I flew down to Georgia and he met me he picked me up in his car. And very early on, we're driving and there's a car in front of us. It's kind of driving slow and somewhat erratically. And Rocker says to me, fucking Asian women, they don't know how to drive. And the guy driving the car was white. We pass him and there was a white guy driving a car. We get to a toll booth. Am I allowed to curse, by the way?
Yes, of course.
Okay. We get to a toll booth. It was one where it had a change collector basket, which probably doesn't exist anymore. And he tried throwing in some coins and the thing wouldn't open. Someone behind us starts honking. He rolls down the window. He sticks out his middle finger and he goes, fuck you. The booth won't open. He spits on it. He actually hucks a loogie, like a big time, and spits on the toll booth machine. Somehow it opens. Maybe someone comes over. I remember. We're driving down the street. It's been set up for him. This day has been set up for him. I'm going to come to him as he speaks to a school for disadvantaged kids. We're driving to the school. I'm like, so do you enjoy doing this stuff? And he's like, fucking no, but my agent wants me to do it, blah, blah, blah. We get to the school. He used to enter games in the ninth inning to the Twisted Sister song, I Wanna Rock, which you guys are both age appropriate enough to know, as am I, that we know that song. And they play the song. He comes out. He's great. It's a CD. They had a CD. We're leaving the school. He says, thanks a lot, takes the CD, literally steals the CD from the school, takes it with him. We're driving around. You said borderline racist. I would actually say just factually racist. He calls a black teammate a fat monkey. He talks about queers in New York City. He hates immigrants. He does not like anybody, basically. It's weird. I was Jewish. He didn't say anything about being Jewish. I think we were two white guys in a car. That's how he viewed it. Mm-hmm. We're two white guys in a car. And I'm a Jewish liberal New Yorker. Like, you do have to know your audience a little bit. I'm not going to be like, yeah, the blacks do suck. Like, that's not my, you know, Tommy. So I have this crazy, crazy day with John Rocker, just absolutely insane. And the story came out, the last issue of 1999 in Sports Illustrated. Before things went viral, it really went viral. It just exploded.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was really my introduction as a writer to sort of a national stage.
Yeah. And in a big way. By the way, when you're doing that, are you looking down, making sure that tape recorder is rolling? I mean, am I getting all of this? That's what I'd be doing. And, holy shit. I can't believe this is happening.
When it was over, I got out of the car. He's like, all right, dude, it was great hanging. And I'm like, okay, dude. And I called my mom and I said, I'm very close to my mom. And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck just happened. I don't know what the heck just happened. And when I wrote the story, I didn't really know. I was kind of, again, I was 27. I was relatively new to a national sort of scene. And I asked another writer, I was like, do you think this thing is going to make the AP wire? And he's like, you have no idea how big this story is going to be. And it blew up.
I'm amazed that he is a pitcher and he missed the toll booth with the coins. I mean, there, it's kind of the downfall of his career.
No, he got him in. How do you... he actually did get him in.
Oh, just, he did. It wouldn't really get broken. Wait. He got him in. He got the loogie in.
Right down the middle with the loogie.
He got the loogie and he got the coins in.
A hanging I'll tell you loogie. Real quick,
there's a part two to this story, which is 6 months later, Braves are playing the Yankees in Atlanta and Sports Illustrated wants a reporter to go down and cover the series. And I said I would do it because as a reporter, you are taught accountability and that you need to face people who are mad at you. So I went and I spent 98% of my time in the Yankees clubhouse, but I knew I needed to go down to the Braves clubhouse just to say, at least I tried. And I'm walking down the hallway and I hear a voice and it goes, you don't know how long I've been waiting for this. And I look up and it's John Rocker. He's probably 6'4", 230, definitely steroided out. And he gets in my face in the tunnel and he just starts jabbing me. Do you have any fucking idea what I could do to you? Do you have any fucking idea what you did to me? Do you have any blah, 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 blah? And it was 2 minutes of not the most fun.
I hope you're wearing catcher gear.
I was, well, I had spittle on my glasses. I had actually his spittle on my glasses. It was that close.
You know, it's unbelievable he could be that naive, honestly, right? That I don't know.
Is it though?
Naive that he said all that stuff, or naive that he would have the reaction that you actually wrote the story?
Well, no, but the tape recorder on, I don't know. I mean, only because I've gone through interviews. I'm always aware of everything I would say, just in case something. You just got to be aware. And he's just not. I think Jeffy nailed it. It's just two white dudes in a car.
Yeah, he thought he was with a friendly audience.
The guard is down.
100%.
Yeah, just saw it's completely that.
In a bar, right? That you're going, hey, man, that's cool. That's hilarious or something.
Two white guys in a car.
Yeah, and the thing is, I always say this is actually important. I know this isn't a journalistic, like you're not trying to teach journalism here, but I always say, like, as a reporter, it is not my job in that. I disagreed with 98% of everything that came out of his mouth that day. It is not my job as a reporter to sit there and say, you know, John, your usage of the word fat, you know, whatever, blah, 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 or it really offends me. Like, my job... it's not to agree with them. It's not to argue with them. My job is to sit there and listen to them.
And listen and write. I agree with that. Isn't it funny, though, how certain pitchers like a John Rocker, the career span, there's a few that go on. But isn't it when you get the fame and you become popular, I think if you're young and fame is probably a very bad disease to have, you just lose it. It's like maybe that 1 year of popularity. An example is that our listeners probably don't know this either. You remember Mark Friedrich? He had the 1 year, the bird. And it's like, it's gone. It's gone. It's like, what happened? You get the, I call it the Rocky syndrome. You win the thing, you get all the publicity, you get everything on TV, and you forget your focus. And you lose that, the eye of the tiger. And I think that goes on with another example. I think it's like Christian Yelich of the Brewers. Got the big contract. Last 2 years, he's been a bum.
Kano takes that part personally.
Well, I think I'm right. It's true. I just think I'm right with that because you get the money and you no longer have that hunger.
That's partly human nature. So some people are just wired differently where it's not going to affect them and they want to prove that they earned it. And some, I mean, come on, $500 million, $200 million, $150 million.
Yeah, and
guaranteed.
I think the psychology
at all.
Of that, of what it's like to go up and then just straight down. It's a very it's short, famous, fleeting.
Jeff, did you know? A, when you got out of the car, when you called your mom, and then B, when you wrote the story and filed it, your life is going to change. Is that accurate? Did your life change because of that?
I would say temporarily it did. It definitely was an uncomfortable situation. Like, I was always raised I have a very, very, very hardcore journalistic newspaper background. And I was always raised that you are not supposed to be a part of this story. You are chronicling it, but you're not supposed to be a part of it. So it was really uncomfortable. It was really uncomfortable. My life changed in that seven times a year now I'm asked about John Rocker, and it used to be 500 times a year. And,
right.
You know, I mean, Cato, you know what it's like to be asked about something over and over again. And after a while, you're like...
Yeah, no, 100%. It's like, no, I got another life. That's the past. I don't like dwelling on that, the dark side. I like the light side. But, I would think... what was my point going to be here?
Well, Jeff, do you think you would have become this prolific writer of books?
Oh, I know.
Did that have anything to do with it at all? I mean, did that accelerate you getting? I mean, you became a big star at Sports Illustrated. You got to evolve from there. You got to go to another level. Or was that always the plan to eventually, you know, do what you're doing?
First of all, I don't know if I would say I was a big star.
Well, your name was very recognizable.
I guess.
You know?
No, I don't. You know what? Honestly, the biggest break in my career was just writing for Sports Illustrated and having a big audience and being able to write for, at the time, the biggest publication in America, sports-wise. So I don't think I got a book deal because I wrote the John Rocker story. It gave me some visibility.
Yeah, and CNN at one time had it was Nick Charles and Fred Hickman.
Fred Hickman.
And I think, yeah. I don't know if you were right, that was, you were on those shows also? I mean, that was when sports...
Yeah.
Fred Hickman died today. Did you guys hear that?
What?
Yeah, Fred Hickman died today.
Oh, I just brought that up. I didn't know that at all.
Greatest
Holy
guy.
Crap.
I mean, back in the day, that show.
Oh, they were great. They were ESPN. They were just as good, if not better.
When I broke into TV, when I was a senior in college, we went to my friend who became a broadcaster as well. We went to New York. We went to ESPN, and we went to Atlanta and hung out with Hick and Nick. And they were just the coolest. But Fred was smooth. Yeah, he died today. It's terrible. He's 66.
Holy cow!
Yeah,
he was great.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about Favre. Is this thing surprising you, this whole thing that's going on in Mississippi right now? I know you're not – it's kind of – I know you look at it a little disgusting of what's going on, but how do you process all this? And what's the end game? How much trouble do you think he's in?
First of all, he's just a dick. Like, I hate to say it. I wrote a book about him. The idea – I'm just saying. First, I'll put allegedly in front of this because we don't have all the legal facts. But, like, you're Brett Favre. This is what I don't get. You're Brett Favre. You play 20 years in the NFL. You are exposed. One of the gifts of playing professional sports is you are put in this diverse, diverse world. And you meet people from all walks of life. And that's an incredibly cool thing. You know, like your teammates could be the farm boy from Nebraska. It could be the kid who grew up in Gary, Indiana in the inner city. You run the spectrum. You meet all these people and you hear their stories and you know their plights. So you're Brett Favre now. And you have a lot of money. And you want... your alma mater, where your daughter's a volleyball player, Southern Miss, to get a new volleyball arena.
Right.
And you're comfortable with welfare money that is designated for the poorest people in your state, which, by the way, is the poorest state in America.
Right.
Mississippi is the poorest state in America. You're comfortable with the idea of welfare funds being taken from recipients to pay for, wait for it, a fucking volleyball arena at your alma mater. It is so disgusting and so disturbing. And I'll tell you something. This is where you're going to be like, I shouldn't have asked this guy the question because it goes dark. We should have been done with that guy when he sent pictures of his freaking dick to a sideline reporter or a woman just trying to make a living. But we were like, the gunslinger. Look at this. He's back with the Vikings. It's so cool or whatever. You know, what a story. We gave him a pass because we found him charming and we found his athletic exploits exciting. But he's a freaking douchebag. I said on Twitter, don't buy my book. Don't waste your time reading about this guy. He's just an asshole. He's not worth reading about.
Any of this come out? Could you sense this? Did you see signs of that when you did the book? Or did you not spend that much
time? I saw signs that he was an asshole because he sent penis pictures to a sideline reporter. Jen Sturger's become a pretty good friend of mine. She's a genuinely good human being, like a really good human being. And he ruined her. He ruined her. And we just were like, ha ha, penis pics. Like, you know.
What a weird thing to do. I mean, that's just so bizarre, isn't it? I mean,
did he know her
when he sent those? I mean, other than a professional relationship of being interviewed on the sideline? They didn't have any, close friendship or nothing intimate.
No. She was with the Jets. He was with the Jets. Okay. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Weird.
It's very strange. And it's the whole Cato thing.
Cato, if you own a Favre jersey, you should get a maybe get a Lynn Dickey or Don Majkowski jersey.
Instead. I don't have the Favre jersey, but I do have the Aaron Rodgers signed football. And you know, it was funny too. I got to tell this story. I've said it before. This Bill Maher did a club random with Aaron Rodgers, and the conversation turned towards me. I've been a friend of Bill for over 20 years, and promising that Bill was going to get his jet and take us to the Super Bowl in Glendale. And Aaron Rodgers had thought that's really cool. Cato talked in 2004 and five. I said the Packers have this guy, Aaron Rodgers. I went to a practice. I've never seen a tighter spiral. This guy is going to be amazing. And all the buddies at the Playboy Mansion at the time are saying, Cato, you're a Packer fan. That's why you're saying that. I said, mark my words, this guy is going to be so great. And I was waiting for Favre to get out because, look at, he threw the last – his last plays of every team he played for was an interception. And he broke my heart against the Giants in Lambeau, of all places, where he threw the last – the interception, and there were four guys wide open. Anyways, that went on, and I was like, yes, because I was so excited. I go, Bill, I'm going to the Super Bowl. I think the Packers are going to make it. They're picked number one in defense. And this is all September 1st is happening. And now he just blows. And it's like – what has happened? I'm not going to be going to the Super Bowl in a private jet. So, yeah.
Not to watch the Packers, at least. Sorry.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's fun. It's like like watching sports. The older I get, I can't waste my time anymore.
It's funny.
I
grew up in Minnesota, and I was a Viking fan growing up. Yeah. I kind of like deserted them, you know, over the past few years. But how about that crossbody throw against the Saints? By the way, my new next door neighbor, Sean Payton.
Oh, that's
how cool! Is that? Yeah, for real, it's really cool.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah, are you team Tommy Kramer or team Wade Wilson?
Definitely Tommy Kramer. 2 minute Tommy, 494 strip Tommy. Oh, he used to party with the best of them. No, without a doubt, I love number 9, Tommy Kramer from Rice University. See, I was a fan. I was that kid that was balling off after those bad losses. A lot of tears back then.
Did you feel good about the team drafting Darren Nelson as their featured running back, or were you a little turned off?
No, I like Darren Nelson. I mean, he was the original, like, multi-purpose back. He could catch the passes. He was dart around the backfield. I was a fan.
And he was in a rock group, right? The Nelsons, was that him?
Yeah, that was him.
What was that song they had, the long blonde hair? Was that the same
That
guy?
Was Nelson, right?
Oh, Nelson.
In the early 90s.
Or Clay Matthews, yeah.
What about the governor of Mississippi, like, throwing his whole political career and life, basically, on top of this? Do you, I don't know how close you're following this, right? But is there a possibility that they could, like, be federal charges, lawsuits, have to pay money back? Or are they going to weasel their way out of it?
It seems like a long shot. It seems like a long shot, unfortunately. I will say, I mean, it's really interesting. Like, the governor, Governor Bryant, former governor of Mississippi. Like, I always feel like, what is wrong with you? Are you 12 years old? He did the same with Marcus Dupree. Like, Marcus Dupree was involved in this too. It's like, you're an adult. As I say, you're a grown-ass man, and you're worshiping over some guy because he could throw a tight spiral. Like, you're willing to fuck over welfare recipients because you love being with Brett Favre because he was a quarterback of the – like, it's so demented and insane. I don't get it. I don't know if this was beaten out of me being a sports writer and having access to quote-unquote famous people through the years, but, like, why are you so impressed? And why aren't you just as impressed? To me – Brett Favre is no more or less impressive than the mailman, the doctor, the dentist, the guy who paves the road. They're all skills. It's just a random skill that we value. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, and for Favre, he's a god in Mississippi. So I think he can kind of do anything.
It's different down there.
Yeah, and I think people can do almost anything. If they're sports fans, they can be adulated by anybody no matter what they do. There's even this dude that allegedly killed two people still getting fans. An incredible following on Twitter. So it's just amazing that people can put the real life things behind them and put these other people on a pedestal.
Did you see what that fake Adam Schefter did on Twitter? He paid the money to get verified, and he said it was fake, but he set up the Twitter account to look just like it. And then he broke some news about some big trade and got like 4 million likes or something. Hilarious. But
that's
I mean, if you can buy that blue check mark now, I mean, it kind of defeats the purpose of having it. Hey, let's talk about Showtime, your book on the Lakers.
Okay.
Did you talk to Jeannie Buss at the time? Did you spend any time with her?
Yeah.
Did you get any inclination that she would not be a good owner? Because I like Jeannie. But man, it's such a disaster right now. It's so bad.
I mean, I can't say she's a bad owner. I can say she's going through a really bad period where she's being a bad owner. She's also had a lot of and I'm not like, Jeannie doesn't even talk to me anymore. Jeannie, I felt like I had a nice friendship with Jeannie actually over the course of, I wrote two books about the Lakers. I wrote a book called Showtime, then a book called Winning Time about the Shaq Kobe years. And I had a great relationship with Jeannie, but the Lakers were definitely pissed off about the TV show, Winning Time. And she doesn't really talk to me anymore, which is a big bummer because I really like her. I don't know if she's a good owner or not. I mean, obviously she's not these days. That franchise is, I have a friend. It's so funny. There's a kid who lives down the street from me. He's a college kid named Drew. And he's a diehard Laker fan. And I love just texting him and being like, God, your team is shit. And last night he wrote back to me. Last night he wrote back to me and he said, this is the worst team in the NBA. And I was like, this might be the worst team in the NBA. You actually might have the worst team in the NBA.
Yeah, so. And they're uninteresting and they're unlikable. That's a bad combo. Yeah. I would not spend 5 minutes watching one of their games. They're joyless. I can't stand it.
It's
an embarrassment, especially when you look at the book you did, Showtime. I mean, that is Laker basketball. That's sexy. That's fun. That's cool. It's
And the viewership is way down. It's pretty much over until that. At least for this next 3 years, yeah. I think they're pretty much done. And I think putting too much on LeBron,
his groin handle it. He's down again. Jeff, was it surreal watching Winning Time? Have you been watching it? It's interesting to get your perspective of this. Did you like it?
It's awesome. Oh, freaking! First of all, people come up to you and they say, all right, we want to buy the rights to your book and we want to make an HBO show. And Adam McKay is going to direct it. And we're going to put, we'll get Adrian Brody and we'll get Sally Field. We'll get John C. Reilly and, you know, Jason Segel, and we're going to put him in a show. Is that cool with you? Oh, and you're going to get paid every episode, and you get to be a producer on the show. Are you okay with that?
Okay, I understand you like that part. Do you like the show?
I love the show. Okay. I love everything about the show. Okay. I am thrilled by the show. I watch it every week when it's out, when it was on. I've watched it on, you know, I watch it on demand. We got to be in the show. I get that. I know you're going to ask about the, you know, oh, Jerry West was pissed or whoever was pissed. Like, I get it. I 100% get it. Like, you're Jerry West. You're home watching the show.
Yeah.
The show is not a documentary. It's made for entertainment.
Right.
You're like, this is not, I didn't say that. Or that they don't have me quite right. I understand why you'd be upset. But for me, as the author of a book, where I can walk into a bookstore now and on my book cover it says, based the HBO show Winning Time, you will get no complaints.
No doubt. I get it. You know what? I wasn't a big fan of the Magic Johnson character, I thought he...
What?
I thought he lacked the joy of... Well, I mean, how do you recreate
that? As you know, it's opinion.
This is opinion. Riley was amazing. Riley was phenomenal. And this is a casting thing over anything else. That's all I'm saying. Well, right?
And for those that don't know, Adam McKay, Talladega Nights, his partner's Will Ferrell. They got the comedy elements of, John C. Reilly.
Anchorman, right? Didn't McKay do Anchorman?
Yeah, no, I think a guy named Sanchez, Gary Sanchez did. I could be wrong, but I think I'm right.
All right, season two, they're doing that. I see the castings for it all the time. Do you know where they're going with it, season two? Obviously you do.
I do. I think it's the next two seasons of the Lakers.
Okay.
And I cannot confirm or deny that I will be playing a reporter in one of the episodes.
Are you on set a lot? Or were you on set?
No, not a ton. I never aspired to. I'm not just saying this. Like, my goal isn't to be a Hollywood writer or anything like that. They send me all the scripts. I read all the scripts. They send me all the casting reels. I give my opinions. You know, it's all good.
It's all really good. I mean, to be involved like that. And tell me what episodes you were on first season. We'll go find you.
I was only in episode one. I was a reporter in the commissioner's office when they do the coin flip. My wife, Catherine, was the Chicago Bulls. Rod Thorne is the GM of the Bulls, and she is over his shoulder. And she has there's one scene for a second where she laughs and it's just her face on the screen. So we had big moments.
Hey man, that's cool. You're home watching that on HBO Max. You can't beat that on a Sunday night. Great. Okay.
It's your screensaver.
Hey, let's play a little game. I'm going to throw a little book at you that you've done and you can just give us a scandalous moment from it. Okay. Boys Will Be Boys, the Cowboys, the Dallas Cowboys, the White House. What about the White House? How real was it? What the hell was going on inside the White House? Their party house, right?
To quote Nate Newton, the offensive lineman for the Cowboys. Yeah. Basically, he said something like, why are they all getting mad at us if we just running in and out some hose? Why is that so bad? And that wasn't a direct quote, by the way. But, like, you know, it was a place where they snorted coke, had sex with lots of women, and it was in, like, suburban, suburban house.
Michael Irvin's the doorman. Are you on the list? Come on in. Yeah. Oh, man. They got away with it. That was a fun team to watch. Loved them.
Fun team to write about.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing stuff. Nate Newton, Michael.
I have a funny story about Michael Irvin.
Michael Irvin was at the dinner, and I have a funny, just funny. So he came up to me, just hugged me. I didn't know him, but it was so. I think everybody relates to me as like I played football for the Buffalo Bills. I didn't, by the way. It's like Cato. No, I didn't play that. You're thinking of the African American OJ. I'm just Cato.
Maybe they think you're Steve couch. Tasker or yeah. something like that. I'm not
I'll
sure.
take it. Hey, John Beebe.
So I'm friends with people that run one of the biggest life club or health club chains in the country, and Michael Irvin used to go to one. And they had a lounge with leather chairs, like in kind of the front, like with leather couches, like really relaxing. And then into the locker room, they literally had to tell Michael that he couldn't just be lounging on the couch naked all the time because it was causing a stir with other members that are walking in and just trying to get their work. He's in this area with couches just lying around naked in a health club. I find that odd.
Sometimes you got to.
Yeah, but you're saying with it's a male female club.
No,
too?
No. Oh, but I mean.
Oh, yeah,
But the naked man is,
I just want to say, I snuck in when I was reporting that book. It was when I was reporting it, Michael Irvin was getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. So I went to his Hall of Fame induction to report on it, and I snuck into his Hall of Fame party. Like, I literally went under a tent, snuck in, and there was security, and I kept dodging security all night. And they had the Pointer Sisters were playing live, and they had free M&Ms all over the place.
Hey, the sad thing is Michael Irvin couldn't make it because he was still doing his speech.
I loved his speech.
It was good. It was great. Yeah. The problem when you get inducted into Canton, it's usually hot and humid and you're just sweating, right? Yep. And you just go, oh, Ray Lewis, remember that one? Yeah. He was going on and on and on. Shorter is better when it comes to those sometimes.
Always. Yeah. Always.
Edrin James, I think, was one of the best ones ever. So that was just 2 years ago, I think, right? Yeah.
Jeff, do you need a break after putting, 700 interviews you had with this? Give me a rhythm for you as you're writing this. Like, how many days a week are you actually writing? Are you weaving the research in at the same time? Or what's your process?
I usually do, I take about 2 years to write a book, and I take a year and a half, and all I do is report and research and dig and dig and dig. And then I'll take the last 6 months and just, okay, I'm going to write. And every day I'll write, and I'll have a pile of articles and interviews and stuff highlighted and in front of me, and it's a fucking nightmare, man. It's pleasure pain. Mm-hmm. That's why I always say it's pleasure pain. It's joyful, but it's also really hard.
The end product has to be joyful. And what is the book that you wrote that is the joyful one for you? I'm sure what you have a favorite and why.
Well, I have the most fun book. I wrote a book about an old football league called the USFL,
yeah,
the United States Football League, famous because Donald Trump ruined it, and he really did. And I'd always wanted to write that book because I grew up an enormous USFL fan.
Right. Well, Herschel Walker was that, right? Wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
He started
in New Jersey Generals.
Del Flutie, yeah. Jim Kelly, Steve Young, Reggie White, Sam Mills.
They're all, yeah.
On and on and on. And I loved it. It was a spring rival to the NFL in the early 80s. And I'd always wanted to write that book. It was a dream book. My agent literally said, who is great, by the way, said to me, nobody wants a fucking USFL book. And I wrote it. It made the New York Times bestseller list. It was one of the most gratifying moments in my career because I just really, and the other one was Walter Payton. I wrote Walter Payton's biography.
Yeah.
And, it was, I love Walter Payton. So it was kind of cool.
Cato, when that book on the USFL came out, Jeff signed it to his agent. You're fired. You have no judgment whatsoever.
I did not.
Allegedly.
The judgment, he hits on 99%. He had one miss.
Well, I bet you've never stopped talking about that one he missed though. That's fun. You always got true. That over him. Yeah, great. Anything else you want to say about the bow? I mean, you went into it thinking that he maybe is the greatest athlete of our lifetime, of multiple generations, maybe of all time. Still feel that way? Did you learn anything about him that really shocked you or that you didn't know, either athletically or personally about him?
A ton. I mean, just to give you an understanding of how great of an athlete he was, he's from Alabama, Bessemer, Alabama. When he was a junior in high school, he won the state decathlon championship. He won again as a senior. He was so far ahead, he skipped the last event. He did it on a sprained ankle while wearing his sweats the whole time. The day after winning the state decathlon championship, he pitched his only game of the year for the McAdory High baseball team, struck out 13 batters in a win. He stole 90 out of 91 bases as a high school baseball player. He set a national record for home runs in a season with 20, missing 7 games because he was to compete in track and field. He ran a 4.13 40 at Auburn, went to the Raiders. They timed him in a 40 on grass. He ran a 4.19. They retimed him. He ran a 4.17. his first major league at bat was for the Royals against the Chicago White Sox, September 2nd, 1986. Steve Carlton is on the mound for the White Sox. Bo beats out a grounder to second. He's clocked at 3.6 seconds, which is the second fastest home to first time for a right-handed hitter in major league history. And after the game, he admits he has no idea who Steve Carlton was.
This is great. Does he ever, you know, the accident, the injury that he had with his hip, can you explain it to me exactly what it was that it never came back? Was it so unusual of the tackle that was made when he was a Raider of how that ended his career? And psychologically, he being this, what you're saying, this, the speed, everything about him is the greatest athlete ever. How that had to affect him that he knew he faced mortality of, I'm no longer that person that I was yesterday.
So the injury was it was called avascular necrosis, and it's basically a deadening of the body part, actually a deadening of the hip itself. And the injury was weird. It was a 91 playoff game, Bengals Raiders. Bo's running down the sideline, and a linebacker for the Bengals named Kevin Walker grabs his leg, and Bo is moving forward with such force that it basically dislodged the hip from the joint, and the hip came out. And it was a devastating, devastating injury. The next day he goes for a scan and the doctor says, Bo, do you see all that black? He's like, yeah. He goes, that's all blood. Like, it's just all blood. It was like an ocean of blood. And basically the muscles around his hip were all dying and the hip was dying. And he never came back. He had a hip replacement. And the amazing thing about Bo, one of the amazing things is, 1990, he has a hip replacement in 92. 93 and 94, his last two major league seasons, he literally played both those years with an artificial hip and not a 2022 artificial hip. He played with an artificial hip your grandma would have gotten in 1990.
So
and he played two seasons.
And I wonder when that accident happened, if the technology of having a hip surgery, because you read about all these, everybody having these hip surgeries or the sanding down of the joint, if that would have saved his career. I don't know, but I wonder if the technology of today would have actually saved his career.
Yeah, so the tennis player Andy Murray, the British tennis player, had a similar injury, had a 2019 maybe hip replacement, which is totally different.
Yeah.
And came back to play not quite what he was, but very close. And I talked to the doctor who performed that surgery on him, and he said if the injury Bo had happened in 2020,
that's great.
His NFL career would have been over. But he could have been a baseball player. He could have maybe lost a second off his, off his 40 time and still been really, really good.
You know, Jeff, you missed one bit of research. I don't mean to call you on this, but when he had the hip replacement surgery, he actually did that in between games of a doubleheader, did it to himself, replaced the hip himself, and then played in that night game. That part of the lore of Bo.
100% true. 100% true.
With a butter knife, by the way. It wasn't even a scalpel.
Are you kidding me? He is talented.
All right, man. Jeff, it was awesome. Cato, you got anything else?
I know. Jeff, thank you so much for taking time out of your
my pleasure. My
being
pleasure.
In San Diego.
Yeah, great to meet you, Jeff. Continued success. Do you want to break the story of what the next book's going to be? Can you give us a little, could you tease us and maybe we could try to figure it out?
It is the Cato story.
I've been trying to get that one for a while.
I would love you to write it. Someone asked if they want to do my autobiography. I said, no, I know nothing about cars. Anyways,
nice.
Maybe one day
I get it.
Thank you,
Jeff. You do the book, man. You get a lot more of that.
I'll tell you, Jeff. Maybe we'll do something. I have an idea. I've always been in my head. It's Cato. It's just called the 16th minute, going beyond 15.
Well, think about it, and Jeff. Could be good.
All right, fair enough.
All right, man.
Pleasure, my friend. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Continued success. Appreciate it.
Love him. Thank you. Love this stuff.
You know. He picks amazing topics for books.
Yeah.
Right? And then think about it. If you can get one turned into an HBO series, back in the day, this is like in the mid-90s, I wanted to write for Maxim magazine. Do you remember Maxim and how popular it was when
those
it came
Maxim
out?
Maxim Christmas parties. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. Or the Maxim Super Bowl party.
Yeah.
And at the top of the magazine for Maxim, which you could never get away with now, but back when the world was fun and people had a good time, and Generation Z didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know?
The woke culture is kind of below
it. At the top of Maxim magazine, it said beer, babes, gadgets, sports, movies or something, right? It's a guy's magazine.
Yeah.
So I kept pestering the editors for Maxim. You got to let me write for you guys. You got to let me write. And it worked. Finally said, okay, because I was working in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, if you can get a story on Michael Jordan, then we will publish that and we'll go forward with you. So I got him. I got Michael. I got him after he did a basketball camp at, I think it was UIC, University of Illinois, Chicago, in a small little office. And I got amazing stuff from him that day, Cato. He was talking about, he was talking so much shit about Jerry Krause that day. It was unbelievable.
Did it get published?
Oh, well, wait for this. And then he started dogging the Chicago police, not really dogging them, but talking about how we got out of tickets. And then we started the story with Michael Jordan doesn't give a rat's ass about blah, 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 blah. That's how the story started. So, yes, it got published. It was good. Now, I did get a call from David Falk because I'm not so sure if Michael wanted all of that stuff out. But Howard Stern was talking about it on his show. It became a pretty big deal. So then they signed me, and then I was a regular contributing editor for them. But then I came up with this great story idea, and we did it. Sports jerks on trial. So these were the guys that were, like, the biggest jerks back then. It was Don King. It was Ryan Leaf, right? It was Kevin Brown, the pitcher for the Dodgers at the time.
Of course.
So what I did was I interviewed all these guys. And then I interviewed them, and then we put them on trial. We presented the evidence, and then we determined if they were a jerk or not. I can tell you this. Ryan Leaf and Stock Tip Dave, you guys spent a lot of time with Ryan Leaf doing Bust the Ryan Leaf story here. Coolest. He was the coolest of all of them.
Humble.
And back when he was kind of like allegedly a jerk. Don King, he was all right. I'll tell you the guy that was the biggest dick, though. By far, it was Kevin Brown, the pitcher. Yeah. Okay, so he was a big-time pitcher. He pitched for the Dodgers back when the Dodgers were owned by Fox. So he got in part of his contract where he got, like, X amount of use of the Fox corporate jet. So he had a nice little perk there. But I remember, Cato, because I drove from Minneapolis to Milwaukee to interview him. It was set up. I get to the stadium. He refused to talk to me. He says, I pitch tomorrow. I'm not talking today. I literally drove from Minneapolis to Milwaukee to do an interview that was planned, and he refused to talk to me. Wow. Guilty. Guilty of being a jerk.
Did you say, hey, listen, I just drove. Did you try to plead your case of, hey, I just drove all the way, about a six-hour drive?
Nah. I don't think it would have mattered because he was just basically indifferent about it. But he was a jerk.
What did you do with your time in Milwaukee?
Had a great. I think I was at one of your dad's bars for a little while.
I was
at
Plotworth. You couldn't get any Dodger to talk to.
If I would have known you at the time, it would have been a lot more fun.
I wasn't even there, but I would have talked to you for sure.
You would have set it up or something.
I would have said, you know, we're going to do a show one day.
All right, man. How's everything else? Everything cool?
Yeah, man. Thanks. The life is great. I got to tell you though, just coming here, to LA, I'm fed up.
Yeah.
I really am fed up. Can I do a rant?
Yes, please.
Can I say fucking or not?
Yes.
I fucking hate the traffic. I'm fed up. There's street closures. There's something going on Hollywood Boulevard. My route is all side streets. I'm telling you, it takes you over an hour to get here. It's only 6 miles. And it's going, I'm driving, you know how you're just missing every light. You don't move.
Yeah.
And the light has changed 3 different times. And you're going, I what is going on?
Well, the worst.
So a truck was on my side,
yeah.
A guy in a truck, and my window's down. I go, what's going on your side? He's going this way. I'm going this way. I go, what's happening here? He goes, oh, they shut Hollywood Boulevard down. I go, and then an ambulance is trying to get through. It can't get through. And I'm going, this is it. I go, I can't take it. I call you on the phone. I am ranting so loud. There's an Uber driver woman next to me. She's going, uh-huh, like giving me thumbs up. I swear to you, I'm not making this up. I'm going, this is insanity. It is complete insanity. Everything is done here is wrong. And I know the weather's great and all that. Can I move some more? Probably not. But I'm telling you, it's days like this I go, I hate it. I hate it so much here.
I can vouch for the ranting because he was ranting. He was calling me and texting me, and I was going to text you back and say, first time in LA? Yeah,
but it's a constant. It really is.
The worst is when Waze will take you off your path and make you turn left against traffic.
Yeah.
Nothing worse than that.
Yeah, they should tell you that on Waze.
Actually, Tom, I was going to tell you, in San Francisco, people were hacking into the Waze app just so they could direct people outside of their neighborhood.
Oh, that's funny. That's pretty clever. Wait, really? Were they really?
What did they say it again? What did they do?
That's sinister.
So basically, up in Northern California.
To keep traffic out of their neighborhood.
Residents were getting so pissed that Waze were directing people towards their neighborhood. And so they found a way to hack into it to make sure the Waze didn't bring anybody into their neighborhood.
Oh, wow.
Classic. Hey, by the way, LA will get a lot better if we get a good favorable result in this mayor race. I'll just say that. Right. They're still counting. Hopefully they know how to count. And we'll be back here next week and see what happens.
Oh, my goodness. The election, huh? And these things that are going on. It's like, really? Florida gets it done that day and we have to wait in all these other places? I am blown away. There's just so much stupidity. Just count the votes. Bye. It's done.
It's over. All right. We wish life were that simple. All right. Download, subscribe, follow us, social media. follow us all week. Cato is one of the most entertaining follows on social media. The man on the street this Cato. Guy does is unbelievable.
Cato underscore Kalin, K-A-E-L-I-N. That's Instagram. Lots of funny stuff coming up this week.
Okay, Dave, we're going to tape our show at 2 in the morning so Cato doesn't have to hit traffic next week. 1 Degree of Scandalous with Cato, Kalin, and Tom Zenner.
Love and life, baby. Subscribe, YouTube, 1 Degree of Scandalous.
See you next week.